Welcome back to FMI's Built-In Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Winstead. If you care about profitability and want to learn more about what great project management really looks like, this is an episode you won't want to miss. I'm joined today by two of my colleagues, Greg Schottman and Nelson Newman, who bring a powerful mix of field-tested experience and strategic insight to the conversation. They recently teamed up to author our soon-to-be-released three-part industry study on project management. Greg is a partner at FMI and a nationally recognized expert in project management and construction productivity. He leads our operational excellence subpractice and has helped hundreds of construction firms across the industry transform how they plan, execute, and lead work. If you've seen him speak, you know Greg has a rare gift. He can make you laugh, he can make you think, and he can make you completely rethink your approach to construction operations in a matter of minutes. Nelson is a consultant in our performance practice with a fascinating background. From building nuclear-powered aircraft carriers and submarines to helping construction firms manage risk and improve profitability. He brings deep technical chops, a systems mindset, and a sharp eye for operational excellence. Greg, Nelson, welcome to the show. It's great to have you.
Great to see you, man.
Yeah, thanks, Scott.
Well, Greg, why don't we start with you? What prompted this study on project management and why now?
So, as it relates to this survey, we had done this survey actually many years ago. It was actually right after the Great Recession. Seemed like an excellent opportunity to examine what's happening in the world, what changes have happened. As we went into this survey, one of the pieces of feedback that we heard pretty routinely is that despite the many advances in tech and talent and process improvement, many of the changes haven't necessarily been incorporated. So using that as our thesis, Nelson and myself went through and kind of looked at really what's happening in the world of all things operations and project management. One of the, I'll call it aha moments or quotes that we got that really set the stage was growth has outpaced discipline. Simply put, for the last, let's say, 15 years, minus the COVID years that were in there, most construction businesses have seen pretty impressive growth. In fact, some pretty historic revenue numbers for a lot of my clients. All that being said, has our discipline in following process, using these tools that we're talking about, have they necessarily kept pace? And the answer is no. In fact, one of the metrics that we kind of gathered from this survey, right about now, 3% of the firms are consistently delivering on time and on budget. If that doesn't hit you in the stomach like a gut punch, really, it probably should. And the fact that we're in 2025, but unfortunately, maybe operating like we're in 1998. One of the big things to also realize is that the high performers are starting to pull away from their previous weight class. They're actually doing a lot of the things that Nelson, myself, and our team within the operations group regularly consult upon. And more importantly, they're doing the right things. So I think those were, in terms of being the right time, this was the right time. It gave us the opportunity to almost challenge the construction industry and the built environment and say, what are you doing to help support project management? And are you doing the right things as a leading edge contractor?
Nelson, I would love to come to you for this next question. So you broke the study down into three parts. For context, can you walk us through each of the three sections and what you'd hope to uncover?
Yeah, absolutely. I think what Greg said stands out a lot. The challenges that folks feel when they're trying to always hit schedule and profit targets. And so we want to start out with a three-part series where part one is all about why project management still fails. There's a huge opportunity for firms to enhance their project management, but it really comes down to the very beginning, how we're planning for these jobs. If we fail to plan, we plan to fail, and we see that throughout the foundational layer from the projects that we go after. Do our folks feel comfortable doing that type of work? Is it a stretch goal? What does that look like? And when it does look like stretch goals, does that change the way we're planning? And so there's a lot that goes into that step in part one. The second part of the survey gets into the execution chaos. Chaos on a project is not something that anyone's surprised about. And we've seen that everyone faces it. It's the high performers that find a way to manage through it. Chaos is not necessarily a positive for anybody, but the best performers find a way to execute despite it. And by doing so, they focus on systems, understanding the leading indicators, and really retiring risk. So a lot of times we focus on percent complete in the industry. Just because we're 50% complete with a scope of work doesn't necessarily mean that we're 50% done with the risk that exists for that scope of work. And so kind of understanding things through a risk perspective despite all the chaos that can ensue on a project. And then the third part's the people in the process. And what that really looks into is the future PM probably won't look a lot like ones in the past. The foundational elements will still be there: planning, scheduling, communicating, understanding things from a business perspective. But how can firms position themselves to create a competitive advantage out of how they define the role of a project manager and how they develop those project managers within their organization?
Building on that, Nelson, and kind of touching on a few of the different three themes, one of the more striking findings that I recall from the study was the so-called 25% threshold. Can you say more about what that is and what the impact is for contractors?
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the things that we wanted to look at is how involved are project managers in the estimating phase across the portfolio of companies that we surveyed. And one of the findings were when PMs felt like they were spending 25% or more of the estimating effort, the profit success, ability to hit profit margins, jumps from 55% to 78%. So just PMs feeling like they had involvement in shaping, maybe it's the assumptions, they know what's coming, they know what's on the horizon, puts them in a position where they felt way more bought in to the budget, the schedule expectations, who the client is. They just feel prepared. And so this isn't necessarily about the amount of time spent estimating. It's how involved do project managers feel in the estimating effort.
Getting their fingerprints on it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think too often PMs inherit budget schedules assumptions that they didn't have part in shaping. And what happens is they end up feeling reactive from day one.
Right. So, Greg, let me pivot over to you now for this next question. From your perspective, what are the most critical questions operational leaders should be asking if they really want to drive greater project predictability across the enterprise?
I love the word predictability. It's interesting. One of the comments I've made to several of my clients, they have their estimating department. And I said, fascinating, we call them estimators, and maybe focusing on accurators is a good thing, because when you think about what project managers do, they're taking this estimate, as kind of Nelson talked about, and making it and transforming it into something very real. So predictability, how do we predict the risk? How do we predict profitability? How do we predict a positive outcome for our firm? So I think some of the most important questions that we need to do as business leaders to support this kind of premise of predictability is, are we actively collaborating or just communicating? Are we just creating a series of checklists? And in fact, I was with a client not too long ago, and we went through. They had a project manager who had simply checked a lot of boxes, and the operations director looked at the checklist and he says, "Why did you check this box for this one item? We don't even have that item on this particular project." And that younger, newer PM said, I thought that's what I was supposed to do." And the point that we're trying to make here is we want this not to be the old baton passing from, say, estimating or pre-construction to project management. Are we collaborating and having the right level of discussion, discourse, and challenging those assumptions? But if it becomes this simply a checklist that we pencil whip, unfortunately, we're going to still see a lot of the same negative outcomes. In terms of influencing some of these assumptions, are we holding people accountable to a standard, to a level of performance? That's another question. A lot of times we get to the end of a project and we start playing the blame game. What about the processes that will influence the outcomes? One of the other ahas of this study is having that structured process and not leaving it to chance. And unfortunately, we're taking a group of project managers, superintendents, construction managers that are very, very busy. And at the same time, we get to the end and go, "Oh, we didn't hit the mark." Well, did you follow the system that we laid out? Additionally, can we feel momentum building before we even mobilize? In some cases, we throw a bunch of bodies on a job site and hope for the best. And I hearken back to two important kind of moments when I saw this kind of take place. One client told me a story about how their clients, the end users, said, "You start like a thoroughbred, but you finish like a mule." Simply put, do you set yourself up for success from the start, or do we just kind of make a lot of activity and don't actually have anything constructive happening? But it's all to keep up appearances to make it look like we're starting on a steady platform, so to speak. I say that because how you start is going to influence how you finish. And Scott, you're obviously know that I'm a big Florida Gator fan. I know probably it pains you to hear this, but I did a quick research and it was fascinating to see. Obviously, when Florida won the national championship in basketball this season, one of the interesting statistics was they were only winning that game against the University of Houston for 64 seconds. Now, obviously, they played for 40 minutes or 4 hours if you're watching it on television, but for 64 seconds was all they were winning. In fact, they were winning at the most important time, which is when the final bell sounded. I tell you that because, think about how construction organizations start and how they finish. One of the most pressing things that I often hear is, unfortunately, our closeout process is the weakest. We don't do a good job. And I'm not simply referring to punch list. I'm talking the entirety of closeout and viewing it as this exit strategy moment for a project. But how did you start? Because that may also help predict how you're going to finish. Lastly, when we talk about, what are our blind spots? What are those things that could bite us? I view project managers in some cases as the eternal optimists, kind of like that sports team that will win it in the end. Don't you worry, we'll bring this back from the depths of despair. When in reality, they kind of knew going in, they had maybe some weak trade partners, delivery schedules were challenged, challenges with the entirety of the supply chain, building departments. Yet they knew it, but they still took that eternal optimist approach. And I'm not saying you shouldn't view things optimistically, but anticipate those roadblocks. What are those roadblocks, and how do we hopefully mitigate them? Once again, that influences this predictability that we're talking about. And those are the questions that I think should be running in the heads of every project manager, superintendent, as well as our executive teams of our construction organizations.
Nelson, you talked about the retirement of risk, which I like the way that you kind of frame that. I go back to the study we did quite a number of years ago, why contractors fail. One of the root causes as to why contractors typically get in trouble financially is they get numb to risk. We've pulled this job out of the fire before. We've done this a million times, and it's going to be the same this time around. Well, there's always that one time when it's not the same. So, Greg, as you think about finishing strong and having the exit strategy, how would you counsel firms to look at the rigor with which they go through a pre-job planning process and their exit strategy process? Are they somewhat one and the same, other than the fact that one's at the beginning, one's towards the end?
I think the best practice or best definition of the clients that view that exit strategy like pre-construction strategy for the last 20% or whatever percentage you happen to view that kind of tipping point. This is the part where we have a punch list that never ends or deficiency list. We have closeout documents, attic stock, just making sure the customer's version of done is the most important piece of this. And I think that to your comment, the rigor with which companies do that, they may do a better job at pre-construction, but I can tell you, at least over the last 5 to 7 years, without fail, most folks say that is our weakest process. In fact, it's because it's not the beginning, it's not the end end, it's the sort of end, which I know is not the most technical way of putting it, but what is that point? But I think most contractors know there is that point where they transition the superintendent to the next job. But they do themselves a disservice because they put in, we'll say, the rookie quarterback for the last 20%, who doesn't know where all the challenges are, who may not have the right eye for it, and may not have the same rigor, as you said. And I think having that pre-construction for the last 20% is a truly, it's a game changer when done correctly.
Thanks, Greg. Nelson, I'd love to shift and talk about alignment. So one of the things that I found interesting is you surveyed both executives and project managers for the study and then did some gap analysis. So as you look through the data, where did you see alignment in those responses? And then where did you see the biggest gaps?
Yeah, when looking at the alignment and the gaps, we'll start with the goals for the project, both profitability and from a schedule standpoint. And so from a profitability standpoint, there was pretty strong alignment on the top causes. For profitability, it's schedule delays, logistical challenges, incomplete or inaccurate estimating. If we look at things like, well, what really drove our inability to hit schedule, it's things like trade contractor issues. Maybe that's coordination. Maybe that's the level of talent on the site, weather conditions, staffing challenges in general, other logistical challenges. Lots of alignment on all the main topics that drive our challenges when trying to hit profit and schedule targets. If we look at the gaps, where the gaps start to show up is one of the big ones was just general theme is the executives tend to emphasize execution issues, things that we have control over. We can solve with the process, we can solve with our operations teams. Whereas PMs tended to emphasize front-end gaps. 61% of the project managers pointed to poor estimates. Now that was still high from the executives, but in general, the project managers felt like they were kind of dealt a tough hand. Where this really started to show up is if we look at supply chain volatility, costs within the supply chain, the project managers were twice as likely to list that as a negative impact to profits versus the executives. So there's some gaps there. There's a couple things that also stood out. We talked about project managers want to be involved in understanding the assumptions, putting together the budget and the schedule if they really feel good about the project. But one of the main gaps is change order management. And ironically, that's where project managers have a lot of control. It's an opportunity for profitability. It's an opportunity to impact schedule. And it's also an opportunity to create a winning relationship with your client. And so those are all things that change orders present the opportunity to do. Sure, they can be a massive risk as well. It comes down to how they're managed. But executives realize that is twice as important for them to focus on than the project managers selected themselves. If we look at training and development of the next generation of project managers, we also saw some gaps there where the executives parked a lot on the financial acumen, the ability to forecast their project, understanding cash flow management. When we looked at the project managers, their development needs that they selected were far more wide ranging. So I think that points towards what the focuses can be when developing that next generation of project managers. Where do we want to develop our talent?
So just building on something, Nelson, you just shared about change orders, Greg, I want to come to you for this one. What did the study reveal about how operationally excellent firms view and manage change orders? And why is this such a strong indicator of overall execution discipline?
Change orders, it's one of the most interesting subjects in construction. In fact, I remember many years ago, there was that meme. I'm sure we've all seen it. It was the big mega yacht. And the name of that mega yacht was Change Order. And kind of attached to the mega yacht was a dinghy with a little zodiac, and it said original contract. And that was a metaphor for, obviously, boy, what a boom change orders can in fact do to your contract. Well, Nelson and I will probably tell you the opposite, that because maybe there was an exploitation or heavy leveraging of change orders, owners have gotten smarter, the level of documentation needed and so on and so forth. They in fact have probably gone the opposite direction, and it's a margin detractor or eroder for most businesses. And I think when you talk about GCs, you talk about self-performance, in fact, it slows down that locomotive. Great, now we got to wait and get an answer. We can't proceed till we get an answer. And it slows down that engine of progress. Well, the best of class folks, as we determined from our study, they view change orders as almost mini projects. They take it with the same level of seriousness as if they were just awarded a $25 million project, because they view it as a profit center And how do we manage this change event most effectively? When we hear about the effectiveness, one of the telltale signs that popped out of our survey, the folks that said they had a highly effective change order process said they were also 85% more effective overall, which was, once again, you have a process, you stick with it, and it has that rigor to ask some of the right questions. Profit and schedule targets, they're met 80% of the time, which is also exactly what we want to see because they're doing it right. Simply put, without consistency, we go back to this predictability question again, and the outcomes are going to be pretty wild and pretty crazy. And then we see margin erosion, and then we see projects that drag on, and the ability to close out projects effectively, so on and so forth. So, how you handle change orders is obviously a reflection of how you run your business. That to me is probably one of the biggest aha moments, specifically from the change order conversation.
So, Greg, just let's keep going on that theme and would love it if you would take a second and describe the role of the project manager today as you see it in your work, as well as you forecast out. How do you see that role evolving over the next 5 to 10 years?
Historically, FMI, we've always used this model that a great project manager is these three things in Trinity: great planner, great communicator, great business person. As Nelson talked about that financial acumen. But they do that in Trinity and they do them quite well. We're not saying that that model will necessarily change, but there almost becomes this divergent path, especially as companies are also being confronted with the let's say decline of capable field leaders that understand how to build. Many of our clients consistently talk about we don't have that next generation of field leaders that are able to run projects from the field specifically, both trade contractor, GC, construction manager alike. So interestingly enough, there's probably going to be this dichotomy of project management, one of which is the field-enabled expert, one that understands all the elements of project management. Maybe they went to school to be a construction manager, but they were always kind of drawn more to the field. Now, obviously, it's going to be incumbent to train and keep their skills sharp, but they're going to be that field-enabled expert that'll help businesses long-term, kind of once again, bringing forward some of that business acumen with a heavy dose of field knowledge. The other one is this business forward strategist. The idea of having project managers be able to be business leaders. And I know you and I have talked about this on many occasions, Scott. You know, the average size of an American business is, I think, somewhere about 2.5 million. The number obviously goes up as we go forward. But, you know, you think about a $2.5 million business from a painting company to a pizza shop to the mega corporations in America. Well, think about your project managers and what they're running. It's not uncommon to see a project manager running projects that have 10, 20, 30, $100 million projects. And as we see projects with the, we call them the mega projects, where there are a whole lot of zeros attached to it, but are they running it like a business with a bona fide strategy? Are they being a project leader and doing those things? So the great project managers of the future are going to be this business forward strategist. And this is not to say one path is better than the other. In fact, I think all construction organizations will benefit from having this left arm, right arm be effective. And if, could you imagine a construction organization that has that field-enabled expert, business-forward strategist as partners on a project, collaborating? To me, that is the essence of a supercharged business going forward.
So Nelson, you've included an interesting metaphor in the study, planning like a crossword puzzle versus an escape room. Can you unpack that for us and explain why the distinction matters?
Yeah, certainly. So if we look at some of the survey questions that were asked around pre-construction, one question we asked both executives and project managers is, project managers at your company do a thorough job of proactive planning and planning in the pre-construction phase. And them to rank that from strongly agree all the way to strongly disagree. Well, ballpark 70% strongly agree or somewhat agree for both groups. So that begs the question, what does really good planning actually look like? Which breeds this crossword versus escape room planning. So if you think about solving a crossword puzzle, especially as a team, you got three folks in the room, some folks are looking across, some folks are looking down, and there's not a lot of collaboration. Everyone's trying their best, but it's a little bit more siloed and perhaps passive. If you think about doing an escape room, it's time bound. The clock's ticking, folks are scrambling all about and actively communicating. And so one of the questions that we like to focus on when we're talking about really excellent, best in class pre-job planning is, what does planning feel like and what does it result in? What's that return on time spent? So we often say that for every 1 hour of time spent planning, you should be saving 6 hours in the field. If we're not seeing results that our planning is resulting in enabling our field to be more productive, enabling folks to understand, to be aligned, have clarity on what those next steps are, then the planning is probably not to the degree that it needs to be. And so no matter how many hours we spent doing that, planning is a skill. Knowing what that return needs to look like is really important for all organizations, especially at that project leadership role.
Thanks, Nelson. It's been a great conversation, a lot to unpack in the study. Look forward to its release over the next several months. Greg, I want to come to you for the last question and kind of zoom out a little bit. There's one mindset shift you'd encourage industry leaders to make after reading this report. What would it be?
I think the key takeaway from all of this is, one, be deliberate. And what I mean by that is operational excellence doesn't happen by accident. I mean, sure, we all love those projects that we're building where we just happen to fall in a pile of gold. But the reality is, waiting for that to happen is kind of like me playing the Powerball lotto. Our best and highest use is to ensure that we go from a mindset of being passive to proactive. We use the phrase, are you a project leader or are you a project victim or witness? And the reality is, you have to take control, lead a project, not just watch the project flow by. Shift from this concept of individual heroics to team consistency. Having that deliberate playbook that has discipline, that has design. And even if you have the current version of the playbook, what does 2.0, 3.0 version of that same playbook look like? So that way we ensure success on the long term. And then lastly, once again, this is not about a software. It's not about a checklist. It's about owning that process. And I go back to the discipline and rigor of forecasting your own success, defining what that predictable outcome is. Don't just run better projects, build that right system to ensure they're run better. That's what we need to be doing. What does that playbook look like? And is it truly accomplishing operational excellence?
Greg, Nelson, great conversation. I can't thank you enough for being here, sharing your insights with our audience. And again, looking forward to the study coming out. Thank you both.
Thank you, Scott.
Thanks.
Thanks for listening to this episode of FMI's Built-In Podcast. If you took something away from the conversation, an idea, a challenge, or just a fresh way of thinking about project management, we'd love it if you'd share the episode or leave a quick review. And please be sure to like or subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss an episode.